Fascinating discussion with Bev Harris from blackboxvoting.org. And we're going to take your calls with her when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Adori with you, along with, of course, Bev Harris, as we talk about elections. How did you get involved in all of this, Bev?
Well, I wrote about financial misdeeds back in the 90s. And then when I started seeing what was going on with the voting systems and saw how that they were getting less accountable and more opaque, I knew that people would take advantage of those loopholes.
Well, and has it been satisfying for you?
It's actually
or frustrating
sometimes. You know, I don't like some of the things I've seen. I was probably less likely to believe that there was much election fraud when I first started. But when I go out in the field and attempt to verify elections, I have actually witnessed election tampering at least three times. Sometimes with some pretty high-level people, and videotaped it sometimes. I mean, it's not in contention that it was tampering. And that is very painful to watch. And the other thing that's very difficult is even when you're very, very polite and you ask very polite and sensible questions that any citizen has a right to ask, you're treated very badly sometimes by public officials. And it's tough, you know. On the other hand, it is darn interesting.
Is it safe to say, Bev, that the good person, the honest person, candidate, is not going to win because of the ability to tamper and hack?
No, it completely depends on the situation and the place and who he's up against and what location he's running in. Because you know, a lot of good people get in, and they really make a difference. I, for several years, covered a story in Kentucky where there was an honest sheriff trying to get in, and they tampered the heck out of his first election, provably so. He eventually had so much popular support. He was a local police chief, and he just rode in on a wave. I mean, they just could hardly even tamper enough, and they couldn't keep him out. And he has done so much cleaning up that county since then. So good people can get in. It's just that they don't always get in if they're up against a corrupt machine.
Well, but presidential-wise, now that was local, but
presidential-wise. Well, presidential-wise, for many, many years, you have to toe the company line, you know, and angels don't make it very far up the political ladder. You become more compromised the farther
exactly.
up you go.
Exactly. That is absolutely true. And I mean, I keep harping back to the Kennedy era because I've read a lot of books and researched that election, his father,
right.
What his father did, you know, the mob and everything else. And I would guess that when he intended to run for office, as he dabbled before he became president, he probably thought, you know, he was going to be an honest, great candidate. But as he
right.
went up the totem pole there, things changed for him.
Right. You know, it's almost like a gang, you know, you gotta kill somebody before you go, not really officially kill somebody, but you gotta do something that they can, so they have something on you as you move up the line. Because the thing is, the two major political parties want to control their candidates, and they will control them with money, you know, with the campaign finance, but also with kind of like extortion. You know, they've got something on an awful lot of people once they get up, and the people have to toe the line and do what they're supposed to do. And that's why when you see outlier candidates like Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump come up, it's very, very threatening to political parties because they don't necessarily think they can control these guys.
Good point. Let's take some calls here for you for the rest of the hour. It's going to go by quickly. We'll go to Brian in Indianapolis, Indiana, east of the Rockies. Hey, Brian, go ahead.
Hey, George, how are you?
Wonderful.
Hey, listen, have you ever thought, you talked earlier in the year about maybe having Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton on. Have you ever thought about trying to make that show happen?
We are trying to make that show happen. The invites are going to go out, and we'll see which ones, if any, accept it.
All right.
That would be awesome.
Hey, listen, I didn't mean to cut you off there. You need to bring your show to Indianapolis, too, by the way, George.
All right. I'll tell Tommy. Tommy's our executive producer of those live events. I'd love to do it.
Hey, listen, I got a very important question. I'm a very frustrated American, especially with this political system.
You're not alone, Brian.
Oh, trust me, I'm not alone. Why is it that people are so bent out of shape and so angry to when you ask them for a piece of identification to cast a ballot, but yet you got to show ID for everything, everything else in this country? Now, why is that? I mean, I'm sure it's because of fraud and corruption, but why? Everybody knows these elections are coming. Everybody has the same amount of time, spare chance to go out and get an ID.
That's right.
What does your guest think? What's the problem with that?
IDs and voting, Bev. What about that?
Oh, yeah, that's been so politicized. I mean, look, other countries, what they do is they issue everybody a national card for free, and problem solved. Here, the problem is it's not free. And it's tough to get, and it can cost you $50, $60, $100 to get it, even when they claim it's free. So that becomes like a poll tax, which is illegal. All they need to do is issue a card for free to everybody that's an ID, and problem solved. But, you know, neither side wants to do it. The Democrats want to kind of everybody to vote with you know, very little control over that. And the really interesting thing, though, is absentee voting. It is huge. West of the Mississippi, about 70% of all votes are now coming in vote by mail. No ID there, huh? So what do you think is happening with those ballots?
Haven't they talked about a national ID card or national driver's license, and everybody's up in arms over those?
Well, they have. And here's the issue with that. What these big military companies want to do is, along with the national ID card, they want to put in a biometric chip, which has your facial recognition scan and fingerprints and all that stuff. Not everybody really wants a Homeland Security-style profile on themselves just to get an ID card.
No, they don't. Dina in Riverside, California. Hello, Dina. Good morning.
Good morning. God bless you all. First of all,
I got to stop you for a second. Do you have your hand over your microphone there on your phone? Because I can barely hear you.
Is that better?
Try one more time.
Okay.
There you go. There you go.
Okay. The last thing regarding the IDs, in some states, you can have a gun registration is okay for an ID, but a student ID isn't accepted. So, you know, some states go to certain lengths to maybe control with the IDs. And also wanted to know what she thinks about the exit polls this coming election, if that's going to be a valid factor, or if they're off, does that mean somebody cheated? And one more thing, with the Koch brothers have started this committee to elect somebody because of the Supreme Court nominee. Does she think they can have an influence on the voting, because obviously it's going to have to be a Republican they want in. So thank you very much.
Well, there's no question. The person with money generally gets to push the candidate they want, Bev.
Well, yeah. You know, I'm jumping back to her exit poll question. I'm so glad, Dina, that you asked that. The exit polls, you know, you can't prove fraud with an exit poll. You can prove fraud by looking at the ballots. And an awful lot of hoopla has been made, especially in the Bernie Sanders campaign, about exit polls. But the truth is, they become sort of like you have a preconceived idea, and it's like you start with the cheese and work your way back to the mouse. You know, whoever wants to find whatever pattern they want kind of finds them. I'm not a big fan of trying to use exit polls to they can maybe be a red flag to indicate you should look at something, but they're never going to prove anything. You prove things with actual documentation. Now, as to the Koch brothers, they actually said at one point that they were going to support Hillary.
That's right.
Which was very interesting.
That's exactly right.
Money is not always winning. It's kind of interesting how many races the heavily financed candidate has lost in the past.
Well, here in the St. Louis area, Bev, there's a well-known Republican contributor who pumped in millions into some local campaigns. All his candidates lost.
Yeah, I mean, so I find it really interesting. I mean, it should be giving an advantage, but it doesn't seem to be a slam dunk. That's one of these things that we still haven't been able to see the whole thing play out. Although it is, I'm more concerned, you know, when they talk about there's no limits on things and not identifying who the donors are. The dark money is what concerns me, because in other countries, they've already been able to prove that some of the dark money, you know, the sort of unidentified campaign contributions, actually comes from organized crime.
Oh, really?
You know, yes. And so you need to know who's putting money into these campaigns, because you don't want it to be, you know, a drug cartel. And that actually has happened. We haven't documented it here, but we have. There was a researcher that did find quite a few organized crime guys in the campaign finance donation lists, you know. So it's like, well, we need to know who these people are. So the dark money, that's got to go. But there's another case coming up with the Supreme Court to try to roll back even more transparency and even more limits.
Let's go to Port Angeles, Washington, west of the Rockies. We've got Tom waiting and now on the air. Tom, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call, George. Hello, Bev. I'm Tom from Port Angeles. How are you doing?
Hi, Tom. I'm doing great.
Great. We've never met unless you made it out to a couple Lincoln Day dinners or something. And
oh.
have you ever...
I'm a neighbor, you know. I'm out on the peninsula, too.
you are just south of us. And I've always wanted to thank you personally for what you do. Has anybody ever consulted you from either party or both parties or somebody of influence and power that's relatively honest, I guess, and said, how do we change things? How do we fix things?
Yes, it has happened, and from both parties at various times. But when it gets up the ladder, somehow no one ever really wants to fix it. So, you know, you've got different people. You've got some very idealistic people who are concerned. And then when it gets up to a certain point, then everybody tells them to shut up.
It's going to be an interesting time, Dev. And when, Bev, do people start making their moves? If they're going to start creating fraud, when did they start really doing it? Does it have to be like on election night? When does that happen?
No, it's before that. One of the things that happens fairly early is the absentee fraud stuff, because that involves printing. You know, somebody has to figure out how many ballots to print, and that happens about 8 weeks before the election a lot of times.
Right.
Another thing when you're dealing with the central tabulator fraud is that political wonks need to kind of look at the precinct data and determine what it is that they think they can realistically do precinct by precinct. So it's not the actual tampering that takes time. That can be done in about 4 seconds, and we've proved that. But somebody has to sit there and analyze and go, you know, what can we get away with and where? And that is fairly time consuming. So I figure that's already going on.
Okay, next up, we've got Kevin in Norwich, Connecticut. Hello, Kevin. Thanks for calling. You're on the air with us.
Hey, George, one of your best shows ever, I got to hand it to you, and Bev's a great guest.
Thanks.
I have two scenarios, Bev, that I want you to either punch holes in or tell me if they're plausible. One would be if Mrs. Clinton wins the election, or we're told that she wins the election, I'll word it that way.
I like that.
The possibility that the GOP might contest the election in such a manner that it gets thrown in the lap of the Supreme Court, where they might have a chance of changing the result. Scenario number B, you like that, would be if the Electoral College decided to break with tradition. Now, my understanding is that the Electoral College, they vote the way they're told to vote, and it varies from state to state. But correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think there's any law that says they have to vote that way. And what are the chances they might break step?
Two good questions. I don't think they'll break step because they won't. But in terms of the if Clinton wins, how likely are they to throw it into contention? I think that has something to do with why we're seeing this narrative coming out, you know, one drumbeat after the next, that it's going to be a landslide, it's going to be huge. You know, what she is going to want to do is try to claim 80% or a huge landslide to just completely nuke the idea of any kind of a contest.
And do you think she could pull that off, Bev? A landslide?
Yeah, I think she probably could. You know, again, getting a little political, but, you know, this is a power couple, the Clintons, that pretty much has every possible angle mastered going way back. I mean, these are people who've been in politics for 40 years in Arkansas and from Chicago. It's not like they don't know how to do all the different
right. things. Right. Will the foundation bring her down, her foundation?
I think the foundation is the, by all accounts, the most high-risk situation she's got. You know, one of the other things I do besides elections, if I live long enough to get this next book out, for years now, I have been collecting indictments of the actual indictment papers of a lot of public officials and looking at how and the mechanisms of what they do, just, you know, the patterns.
Right.
And I will tell you that the stuff with the foundation, there's already people in prison that, just on what's come out already. I mean, you can't do the stuff she's doing. You cannot do it. And it does. They don't have to prove a quid pro quo. If you look at the indictments that sent other politicians to jail, you cannot have money go to your spouse and then set up a meeting. It doesn't work that way.
Well, and what about these bizarre things of people dying, murdered, that reportedly were, you know, going to go to the FBI and then something happened to them? Or they said a guy was killed and he was robbed. Nothing was taken. Nothing was taken from him. I mean, this is weird stuff, Bev.
It's weird. Although they have debunked the idea that these people actually were going to the FBI or actually were going to testify. But I will say that the fellow that they say was robbed that wasn't robbed, it is troubling because he, you know, there were a set of leaks that were very damaging to the DNC. And he held the kind of position who would have had access to do those leaks. He was a tech guy who, you know, so it I'm not saying he did, but he was actually murdered about 2 days after the leaks came out. And they said that he was walking in Washington, D.C. at 4 o'clock in the morning. And I don't think that's, you know, exactly a low risk endeavor.
Yeah, either. But do you just kill the guy and not take anything? I mean,
I know they didn't take his credit cards. Didn't
nothing.
Take cash.
He still had his watch.
Who actually published the DNC docs that were leaked. Put up a $20,000 reward for information leading to his killer.
Yes.
So, and the actually the head of Julian Assange, the guy who runs WikiLeaks, said he was a little bit cagey about how he said it, but he kind of did not say no in terms of the risks. He was made some statements when he put up the reward about the risks that sources take. And
so
then
true.
I'm not identifying any.
Bev, we're going to come back and take final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're going to come back in a moment with final calls with Bev Harris as we talk about election voting and the possibility of fraud. And welcome back to Coast, Bev Harris with us, blackboxvoting.org. We'll get to your calls. Bev, are you available election night to pop in for a little bit with us? Well, we have lost her again, so we'll get her back on. They really don't want her to talk tonight, do they? I am so convinced of that. My gosh. But let's go to the phones Jeremy in Utah. And Jeremy, Bev's not here yet. We'll get her back, but go ahead.
Hi, George. So I listen to Alex Jones quite a bit.
Yeah.
And he, along with Donald Trump, believe because of Donald Trump's internal polling that he's well ahead in the battleground states. Now, he says it's anywhere between 5 and 10%. And Alex Jones says this is because of a 15% in plus 15% more Democrats that are used in the polls,
mm-hmm.
skew all the polls nationally. So my question for Bev is basically, Donald Trump is asking for supporters to enroll in his poll monitoring / exit poll scenario that he hasn't quite spelled out yet. And can this or anything else that we can do help verify and or save the election?
Bev, were able to get all that as we brought you back on?
Yeah. Well, it's really tough to make that kind of a project work well. That was tried with some Bernie Sanders people in California, although it's definitely not a bad idea. And another thing that, they're going to need to do pull out all the stops to try to do every check and balance they can. It kind of varies state by state, but there's a lot of things that they can do to at least take away the impunity. And by that, I mean, when people know you're watching, they do a lot less things. You know what I'm saying? And so it's a good idea to have people around checking on everything. And, you know, you use your common sense when you're out in the field observing these things, because nobody can quite predict all the weird things you're going to see. But if it doesn't look like it's right, then it probably isn't right.
Bev, are you available election night to pop on for a little bit with us?
Oh, of course.
Yeah, perfect, perfect. Because we may need your expertise if things are close. I have a feeling that this is going to be a long night, election night. What do you think?
Well, I have a fear, because I've been watching this, you know, the Clintons, basically. And I think we're going to keep hearing this narrative. It's going to be, she's so far ahead, she's so far ahead, she's so far ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So no one will ask any questions. Or in the states that it turn out to be the battleground states.
Right.
You know, that's what we saw in California with Clinton versus Sanders. It was probably the most shocking media malpractice I have ever seen, where MSNBC put a banner, a breaking news banner, for 24 hours. Now, when have you ever seen that? And they put it up the day before the election announcing that she had won. Now, the kind of the purpose for that is just basically so that people aren't asking so many questions and looking as carefully.
Well, and also what you do when you do that, you know, I always used to protest media outlets in St. Louis or Detroit, wherever I was, to try to come out with forecast projections before
right.
the polls closed. Because
right.
if people hear, you know, candidate A has won even before the polls close, they're not going to go vote.
Right. And the other thing is, then they can ridicule anybody who contests anything. And, you know, it's so offensive. I just can't begin to tell you. It's the media thinks that they can call elections. And they, a lot of times they don't wait for a single vote to be counted. They called Kentucky in the primary this year before a single vote was counted. Not one.
Polls closed at 7 o'clock in St. Louis when I was running a television station here, Bev. I was the first to conduct an exit poll. I had used a guy in Detroit, so when I went to St. Louis, I used him. He's very good, very efficient. And the candidate for mayor was running against the incumbent. He was an alderman. His name was Vincent Schamel. And I called him up and I said, Vince, come on down to my office. Got some interesting news for you. And he said, yeah, sure. So he came into my place, and my pollster had told me at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, polls close at 7, that Vincent Schamel had won. He was going to be the next mayor of St. Louis. And I said, and his polling was, his exit polls were just spot on all the time. I mean, plus or minus a point. And so I called the Schamel into my office, and I said, I want to make a deal with you. If I tell you something you like, I want you exclusive after the polls close. And he said, all right, you got that deal. And I said, you're going to be the next mayor. And he went, what? And in those days, cities didn't have sophisticated exit polling media outlets doing this.
Right.
And so I said, no, you're going to win, and here's the margin, and I'll see you later on tonight. And, I mean, the guy was ecstatic about all of this, but the pollster was spot on. But I didn't release that until the polls closed because of the reason I just cited.
Right, right. Yeah, it's really unethical to release it before the polls close. And now the exit polls, I mean, if Trump does exit polls, and he really does need to use a really good, really trustworthy firm that is going to do them right, because the official exit polls that are just so ridiculous now. They actually aren't even exit polls. They're mixing in people they called at home who claim they voted absentee.
Exactly.
They're mixing in voting machine
all
results.
All screwed up.
You know, I mean, they're just putting all kinds of stuff into the mix and stirring it around and then saying it's a secret formula.
Well, and even nowadays, Bev, you're not quite sure if the person who comes out of the polling booth is telling you the truth.
And particularly in this election, you know, So I think it's going to be really tricky, and I think we're going to know a lot about what to expect based on what we see these pundits say, because these are paid pundits who come on TV, and if you notice, they'll be on three different channels, and they'll all say the exact same analysis. You know, when you see that, you know that there's that's the narrative and that somebody's going to do it. I knew in 2008 to go to New Hampshire and check out the election in the primary because this narrative came out that was just crazy, in my opinion, on the media. And I was like, oh, somebody's doing something. I knew right where to go. So you can actually get a pretty good prediction based on what you see these pundits claiming. I mean, I don't believe any of it. It's just that they're coming out there to create a story so everybody will accept the story and go away.
Let's go to Atlanta, Georgia. Jerry's with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Jerry, thanks for calling.
Hey. Yeah, sure. Nice to be back. Hey, I think, first of all, you can't believe any of these exit polls. Look at the primaries, how far off they were. And also, I believe there'll be a lot of cheating in the swing states. I believe the Democrats will try that. And I believe Julian Assange will finally catch up to Hillary and all the dirty things that they've done, like Monica Lewinsky took Bill Clinton down. I believe Julian Assange will be, I think he already has the ones that are going to hurt, and he's just waiting for the right time to release them, and that's what I believe. And, you know, I just want to say the propaganda. I live in Atlanta. I used to love CNN, but now people around here call it the Clinton News Network, and they call the Anderson Cooper Hour the Anderson Joseph Goebbels Cooper Propaganda Hour. So, you know, that's my opinion on what's going on, and I think it's – I hate to see politics has got this – crazy.
Well,
you know?
a lot of people think that CNN has truly tipped it toward Hillary, and that's one of the reasons why that their ratings have been so low lately. So you never know.
The media is really a problem. They really are, and you know, they complain about the candidates, both candidates, and the thing is, they created it by not doing real reporting for the last 10 years.
Well, you know what's interesting, too, Bev, is, you know, here's a guy, Bill Clinton, who was impeached, did not get convicted, but he was impeached for what he did in the White House. And nobody's really bringing that up anymore. Nobody's talking to Hillary about that, asking her why she stayed in the marriage, you know, why he could embarrass her the way he did, and she hung in there. It's like a non-issue, and it's just... I don't know. You know, it's, and I don't pick sides. As everybody knows by now, I'm nonpartisan. I don't vote for the presidency. I just call things the way I see them. If she does something great, I'll let you know. And if she doesn't, I'll let you know. Same with Trump. And I've said repeatedly.
I'm the same way. It's not about partisanship. It's about the system doing what it is promised to do for the people.
Yeah. And, you know, Kennedy was not a Boy Scout. But the media wasn't what it was today.
Right. You had a media that was actually doing news. You know, the other day I had to travel, and I was in a hotel up near the Canadian border, but I was in the U.S. And I turned on the TV, and I thought, wow, what is this station? It's so interesting. Their news is really, it's like, you know, old school news. And then I realized I was getting a Canadian station.
Let's go to Joe in the Bronx in New York. Hey, Joe, go ahead. You're on with us.
Hey, George, how are you? Good. Yes. I wanted to ask Ms. Harris. Now, there's $82 million that is going to go into campaign commercials for the Trump campaign. When do you think that will start up, and what influence or what effect do you think that will have on the election?
Well, if they're good commercials, they'll do well. But I would guess, Joe, they'll start soon. Bev?
Yeah, I mean, actually, no idea. That's not in my area of expertise at all. I mean, obviously, exposure helps candidates. That's why they need the money for it. It'll be interesting. I guess it all depends on where they're shown and all the strategy behind them and what the commercials show.
Well, she's got money, too, for these commercials.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so they're going to pound away at each other. I have said repeatedly that this is one of the most vicious campaigns I can ever remember.
Oh, yeah. I've never seen anything like this.
The gloves are off. Vernon is in Portland, Oregon. Hi, Vernon. Go ahead.
Hey, well, thank you for giving me some time.
You're very welcome.
Of all the shows you do, which are extremely important, I think this one is absolutely timely, is perfect for the country.
Thank you.
I don't know if you're familiar with the Oregon voter system, but here in Oregon we have, I think, an excellent system where it's all voter. You mailed your ballot, you have 30 days to mail it back. And I find it convenient. It's all paper ballot. It's all traceable. And our senator, Senator Wyden, has submitted it through the to initiate it as the format for the United States, which I think would be solving a lot of the issues that you've been talking about.
You know, I know that Oregonians love the system. And by the way, we have the same system in Washington State where I live now. But the truth is, vote by mail is, and by the way, Oregon does have tampering, and you cannot trace it. Go there in Oregon anytime and ask if you can actually look at the ballots to compare them with the result. They will not let you. Okay?
It's in fact against the law.
So
against the law?
I mean, the problem in Oregon is you have no idea who put those ballots in the pool. No idea whether they're real people or whether they're people who didn't vote and they just threw a bunch of it. The whole signature comparison thing, you know, I know about that. Yes, I've also seen the computer programs that do it. You can set tolerance. You can dump the signatures in electronically. It's actually an electronic comparison.
I'm losing you a little bit on your phone, Bev. Let's get you to high ground if I can.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's essentially the... the vote by mail is not what it's cracked up to be. It is extremely vulnerable. And even though everybody likes it, it is probably second only to internet voting in how high risk it is for tampering.
In your opinion, Bev, do you think it's a waste of time with all this tampering that could go on? It's a waste of time for an American to vote?
No.
Right.
I mean, I've seen enough elections where somebody comes in and actually, you know, does prevail. Because there still is enough complexity in trying to tamper it that like my sheriff guy in Kentucky, nobody thought he could win. But, you know, he just mowed them down by being so popular. When you're trying to do something you shouldn't be doing, things go wrong. You know, we should be out there voting, because otherwise we've just given up. And that's the worst thing we can do.
I agree. Cleveland, Ohio, it's Mike's turn. Hey, Mike, go ahead.
Hey, good morning, George. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Have you ever thought about using or suggesting to use the ACH banking system for vote tabulation? And have you ever consulted with Frank Avenale Jr.? Because I think you guys should write a book together saying, "You can't catch me because I can."
I was thinking that's who you're talking about. I love that book, "To Catch Me If You Can." Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I mean, for people who don't know, and it's a great movie, too. You know, he was an amazing, amazing stuff, but basically pulling the wool over everyone's eyes. He would see through this stuff in a hot second, wouldn't he?
ACH banking is a way to pay and to get paid. How would that apply for an election?
Yeah, I don't understand that part.
Let's go back to Mike. Mike, how would that work in your opinion? Mike, still with us? Nope, Mike is gone. But I don't know how that would work.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, some people have also, one of the kind of hot things right now is people are saying to use something like they do with Bitcoin, which is called blockchain technology.
Oh, yeah, but Bitcoins are getting ripped off on the internet.
Yes, they sure did. And they kept pushing that on me for the last year. And sure enough, you know, last week, I think it was, in Hong Kong, the Bitcoin exchange lost 30%.
Somebody hacked it.
Yep. And they made off with people's real money. So, you know, the thing is, it still has to be something that we can verify.
Now,
and it has to be durable, objective, you know, something the voter actually put his pen to the paper and we can look at.
We're concerned about hacking of election results to better a candidate. But what about that outside third party, Bev? And we only got 30 seconds here, but the outside third party who wants a candidate elected for their own agenda,
exactly.
i.e., let's say the Russians, they may want one of the two. And, you know, they would get in and finagle. Anybody who's got the capability can hack in, can they not?
Right. Anybody who can get access can control it.
Wow, that's scary. Bev, let's keep in touch. I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more before the election, but let's count on you being on the program on Tuesday, November 8th, okay?
Absolutely, and I look forward to it. Thank you.
Okay, and have all your data with us. We'll see what happens. That's Bev Harris, blackboxvoting.org. Up next, let's talk about some ghosts when I come right back.